Could this quote be from you? Many times when I go to bed at night, I think that before I awaken, Christ may come. Sometimes when I get up and look at the dawn, I think that perhaps this is the day He will come. You know, that's Billy Graham. And I read that and I said, isn't it interesting? I'll be speaking to a whole room full of Adventists on the subject of the second coming of Christ, and I doubt if any one of us could say that. Why is it that a Baptist, Billy Graham, can say that, and the Adventists, we know it isn't going to be today? Is that a little strange? Why do I not wake up thinking this is going to be the day? Well, there's too many things that got to happen first. There's many Sunday law, national Sunday law, right? I mean, this that remember all the things that have got to take place first? Isn't that a little, does that strike you as strange? That the Adventists, know it isn't going to be today. And Billy Graham thinks it might be. You know, as I was thinking about that this week, I also had to confess that Jesus was talking to His closest followers when He said, "You also must be ready because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect Him." What if it were this afternoon at 3 o'clock? I don't want to go to the extreme of just saying there's no value in our charts and our last day events courses and so forth. I'm not going to say that. But I have a growing distrust of charts and want to cultivate an attitude and a life orientation of watchfulness and saying, maybe it could be. Maybe it could be. Maybe it could be today. Now, quickly, by way of review, because I consider what I do now to be the role of a teaching pastor, and so in a way this is a classroom, and I am reviewing 2 weeks ago today when we started this three-part series on the return of Jesus. Remember, I made about 3 points. David, you're sitting beside the birthday lady there. Do you know that? Yes, as of yesterday. Yeah. 3 points. First of all, the thing that struck me as I looked at scriptures is that every Christian from the first century to now has lived in a state of expectancy, thinking this is going to be the day that the Lord could come. The Bible writers, the Bible is just full of this concept of the imminence of Christ's return. But also in Matthew 24 and 25, on three different occasions in the parables, Jesus uses the term a long time, a long time, a long time, to give us a hint that it's not going to be maybe as soon as what the other side of the spectrum would encourage us to think it's going to be. He uses that phrase a long time. In one of the parables, remember, everybody goes to sleep waiting and watching because it is so long before the Master comes back. Okay? You remember that? Matthew 24 and 25. And then the third point that particular Sabbath 2 weeks ago was, while it may be a long time, and you have to hold that intention with the nearness, God has set a day. God has set a day. It isn't just out there drifting aimlessly with no terminus, no termination. And you remember, wasn't it 2 weeks ago that we also looked at the three different ways to cope with that tension between the nearness and the long time? We looked at lover's time, not clock time. Remember? Lover's time, bakioki, Allah bakioki. Remember Jacob? What was it? I served for Rachel and it seemed just like a few days. And how long was it? My goodness, he worked for that woman for what? 7 years. 14 years, got a bonus thrown in that he wasn't counting on, right? Oh boy, what a story. And then we also consider the fact that along with that, lover's time, clock time, there's the ethical motivation that comes when you know that somebody's going to be here at 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon and you just absolutely, you flurry around and you get more stuff done on Friday than you ever thought was possible because you've got a deadline.
And so maybe one of the reasons the Lord wants us to believe that it's coming soon is because of the ethical motivation and knowing that if we knew that it was going to be 1,013 years from now, I mean, oh, well, you know, we'd all have that tendency. And then finally, we considered the philosophical orientation. That is, that because death is asleep and there's no sense of a passing of time, the Lord's coming is only a few minutes or hours or days or months or years away for any of us, period. I mean, from that standpoint. Last Sabbath, I gave you three reasons why I believe the Lord is coming soon. And at the risk of sounding like I'm poking fun at our forefathers, I told you that the dark day and the falling of the stars and the Lisbon earthquake don't cut it for me. Do they for you? I see shaking of heads. Do they cut it for you? No. In fact, I would like to find a Bible teacher in one of our academies or even our church school over at Escondido to see if we are still forcing our Bible teachers to go through those lessons and pretend. I mean, I just can't believe that that's connecting. Surely we're not doing that anymore. I don't know. I'd like to ask. But I did give you three reasons, and that is not to say, I'm not saying that that didn't do it for our pioneers, and I'm not downplaying the fact that it did, and I'm thankful that it did. But last week I found three reasons that do connect, at least as far as I'm concerned, and those reasons basically came out of Revelation 16. You remember the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet? The dragon, the beast, and the false prophet of Revelation chapter 16. Last week we looked at dragon, spiritism, the New Age, and the significant developments in the last 10 or 15 years in that arena. We looked at, secondly, the rising power of the papacy in world affairs, taking a position of preeminence that certainly could fit the prophecies. And then thirdly, dragon, beast, false prophet, we looked at the open attack that is being made now on the wall of separation between church and state by the religious right, who most of us supported in the elections, because we agree with many of the things that stands for there, and yet we find ourselves in the strange position of voting for A and also having to swallow B, and B, you know, is totally untenable, and that is the open attack on the wall of separation between church and state that is being made by the religious right. You say, Jerry, I have a sense that you're doing exactly what every generation has done up to this time. You're just going into contemporary culture and finding things that fit the prophecies and looking for that as a way of fulfillment. Isn't it possible that you're just doing what every other generation of Adventists has done from the first century right to this day? Yes! Guilty as charged. Guilty as charged. I will confess it. I don't apologize for it absolutely a bit. I think it is God's desire for us to focus and to have the state of watchfulness and to believe maybe it could be today. Maybe it could be today. Amen? Today I'd like to turn with you to four more reasons. And it was Ron Marlin who came to me after the first service and said, Jerry, you did know, of course, that when you add 3 and 4, you get 7. I said, no, I hadn't thought of that, Ron, but that is interesting. 3 last week, remember, I told you I was going to give you 4 more reasons today. And what I want to do is I want to paint a little graph in your mind. X, Y axis. Which one is X? Which one is Y? I can't remember, Michael. Okay. Y is vertical. X is this way. Okay. It's been too many years since my math classes. Okay, and I want you to picture this curve that you're plotting in this upper right quadrant, and it starts out fairly flat, and then it starts going up, and starts reaching toward infinity, okay? Just going right up. You've seen a curve like that? And as you picture that, I want you to think about the word intensification. Intensification. And as you do that, open the Bible to Matthew chapter 24. Because the 4 reasons that I want to share with you this week all have that word in common, as opposed to the three reasons that we looked at last week. Intensification. Matthew 24, verse number 12. Because of the... Have you got it? Okay, if you've got that word, would you turn to a neighbor beside you and just say that word out loud? Because of the... What is it?
Increase.
Increase. Because of the increase. Or could we substitute intensification? Because of the intensification or increase of wickedness, the love of many will grow cold. Verse number 21. For then there will be great distress un-what? Unequaled from the beginning of the world until now, and never to be what? Never to be equaled again. If those days had not been cut short, no one would survive. No one would survive. Just before the return of Jesus, it is my firm conviction, and I believe this with all my heart, that there is an intensification of the great controversy. It is just like you go to the symphony, and if you're musically literate, you know that you're not supposed to clap when they just come to the end of this movement, the piece is not over, and you sit there smugly saying, and the people that are kind of unsophisticated, they start clapping. And remember, don't do that. This isn't the end of the piece. And you get to the end of the piece, and then what happens? There is a crescendo. There is, in the music, it's invariable. I can't remember a single time that it hasn't happened. There is in the music, built in by the composer, something that communicates to me that this is over. That we are now finishing this piece. Intensification. You go to a movie theater, you watch a picture, you are sitting there, you're enwrapped in the, just in the, enthralled in the plot or the storyline or whatever, and all of a sudden you have a sense. It's over. And you start to get up even before the credits start coming on the screen. Why? Because they write into the storyline and into the music a sense of finality, climax, conclusion. It's the end. It's over. It is finished. It is done. I mean, you know, you have found yourself standing up, haven't you, even before the credits come on the line, on the screen? Or finally, one other little illustration that connects for me. I love fireworks. Do you like fireworks? I generally like fireworks. Now, last night, my next door neighbor was having a birthday party. And we have these twin homes, and my home is right, you know, connected to his. And apparently, his girlfriend had taken him out in a limo. And then when they came back at 8 o'clock, the yard and the house and everything was full of, this guy's about 25. He works for Callaway Golf. And the place was just full of people, and they were shooting off fireworks, you know. And this continued on, you know, somewhat through the night. And luckily, I like this guy. I mean, he's a friend of mine, so I could handle it. I could just, you know, go to sleep, turn on my fan, make it a little louder and so forth. And it kind of covered up some of the noise. I'd say, generally, I like fireworks. Maybe not so much last night. But when I go to a fireworks show, and there is the fireworks display at Jack Murphy Stadium, how do you know it's over? Boy, if you excuse the language, all hell breaks loose, doesn't it, before we're through? And guess what? I think that's a picture of planet Earth. Literally. Everything breaking loose just before the close. And it is in that setting that I make no apologies. I bring to you these four signs that to me, I have hee-hawed. I have laughed at when preachers have brought these signs forward and just said, okay, this has got to be the end of the world because look at this. Look at this. Look at this. No, I look at it, but only in the sense of intensification, climax at the close. Okay? Are you with me? Let's look at them. They're on your sheet listed as 4, 5, 6, and 7, I believe. I'm just taking them 1, 2, 3, and 4 because of the study today. Matthew chapter 24, verse number 14. Here is a passage of scripture that I'm sure most of us have memorized. This gospel of the kingdom shall be what? All the world is a witness to all people, and then shall the end will come.
The first reason why I believe the Lord is coming soon is global evangelism. Global evangelism. Now, Paul in his day had a burden to get out there and light the fire for the Lord in as many different places as he could. And he did his best. But look at what is happening in our day. I mean, we take things so for granted. You know, like, how many of you have at least one Bible? How many of you have at least 10 Bibles? I mean, I've got probably 100 books. Whenever the moving van picked us up in Tennessee and brought us here, I hate to admit to you, but they had one of these great big Mayflower vans the conference sent for us, and they couldn't get everything in. They had to bring it across the country and then send it back again, another Mayflower van. And you know what a lot of that stuff is? Books! Books! Papers! All my evangelistic materials and equipment and supplies and so forth. We take that so for granted. Before the invention of printing, you know, when people didn't have a Bible, they had to, go to the synagogue, go find somebody. You know, they didn't have access to the scriptures. We now have that access. We not only have that access, but I mean, in this information age, I mean, I could go to my computer in CompuServe this last week and I could punch up stuff, you know, getting into the online encyclopedia. I could get into the executive, search news service for different particular items that they could find for me, a clipping service. I mean, the information is absolutely incredible that we can get a hold of, isn't it? It is absolutely marvelous. World Christian Encyclopedia has some statistics on the intensification of the spread of the gospel. They said that by the year 100, 28% of the population of planet Earth were aware of the gospel in their calculations. Of course, I scratch my head a little bit on this and say, how do they know? But anyway, by the year 1000, they said about 25% of the earth. These are fairly round numbers. 1/4. By the year 1900, 50%. By the year 1980, 68%. And their projection was that by the year 2000, 85% of the population on planet Earth would have an awareness of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Intensification. Look at the number of languages that the Bible is available in. In 1900, now here's a statistic you can get your hands on. In 1900, 537 languages. In 1980, 1,811. 1,811, representing 96% of the population of the planet Earth, can read the scriptures in their own language. Yeah. With the information age and the technology that we have today, how quickly could this particular sign be finished? This gospel of the world be taken, you know, to all the world and the Lord could come? I mean, how long did it take for the world to learn that JFK was shot? A huge percentage of the population, and this was how many years ago? This was back in the early 60s. Huge percentage of the population of planet Earth, even the remotest jungles, knew that within just minutes or hours. And think of what it would be like today. I mean, I suppose probably you could go to the most remote jungle in Africa and you could learn details of the latest happenings in the O.J. Simpson trial this week. I mean, I'm sure that all over the world, everybody practically knows every little whisker about that whole thing, right? I mean, the access to information is just absolutely incredible all over the world. And so, I put it down. Reason number one. Intensification, global evangelism. Global evangelism. Reason number two or five in this sequence. Revelation 11. Verse number 18. Revelation 11, verse 18. One of the Pew Bibles. What is that number?
Yeah,
verse 18, but what is the page number? Page?
Oh, I'm sorry, 1223.
1223. The nations were angry. Your wrath has come. Connect that to Revelation 16. God poured out the seven bowls of his wrath. Revelation 16, your wrath has come. The time has come. You think there's no terminus? You think this is just going to wind on forever? Uh-uh. The time has come. The time has come for judging the dead
and compare this with our Acts passage of 2 weeks ago, for he has set a day when he will judge the world. He has set a day. The time has come for judging the dead and for rewarding your servants, the prophets, and your saints, and those who reverence your name, both small and great, and for doing what?
Destroying those who destroy the earth.
I mean, you know, when I was a kid, I would have never even had a faint idea of how anybody could destroy the earth. I mean, I thought the earth was impervious. I thought there was nothing we could do to hurt this planet. I mean, that's where I was coming from as a kid.
Well, guess what? Folks, that ain't so today. San Diego Union headline. Ozone loss over the North Pole may be worse than earlier thought. Who cares? North Pole's a long ways away. Don't have to worry about that. Let's see. What else have we got here? I got this from Online Encyclopedia this week. Human activities now appear to be affecting that balance through the introduction of certain ozone-destructive chemicals. The resulting potential for harm is now of international concern. You mean this is something I need to worry about? Decreases in ozone concentration in the ozone layer were first detected by scientists in the late 1970s and since have been confirmed. In the early 1990s, scientists reported they were also detecting a summer thinning of the ozone layer over temperate regions, including the United States. Interesting. You say, so what? Who cares? Well, you care. If you care about skin cancer, you know, if you care about other things that may be caused by this that scientists haven't even discovered yet, the statistics that I saw were that a 1% decrease in the ozone layer means a 2% increase in the ultraviolet getting through, which translates into a 6% increase in skin cancer. I mean, there's a little something we might care about, right? And that's really just the tip of this iceberg as far as this whole problem. I mean, and who's responsible for this problem? Who's doing this to the earth? I think we are. We're dumping so much junk out. I mean, you know, I love living on the beach. But I do not like it when I go down there and I see these streamers saying water, what does it say?
Contaminated.
No swimming, no, you know, and I live in Cardiff, and I see that all the time, every once in a while. I mean, you can't even be in the water on the beach. I mean, it is right here. Who's doing all this? Well, I think we are. As far as this ozone problem, they've identified a big word that I can hardly even read, chlorofluorocarbons, what used to be in spray cans. It's still used in refrigerants, air conditioning, manufacture of styrofoam, and other things. Wow. Huh. I also studied this week about the greenhouse effect, and that is the retention of the heat, you know, for the earth. Have you ever wondered how it is that we could always be setting these new records about the hottest days, the coldest days, the most snow, the most rain, or whatever? I'm sorry, we're not happy. What'd you do to that kid? Yeah, you're pinching that child all the way in here. I saw that. The pollution, the stuff that we're putting into the air, gets trapped and drastically affects different things, including the weather, causing real problems. The hottest years on record. I mean, we constantly seem to be setting new records time after time after time. In fact, you only have to go to U.S. News and World Report and you can read this. Is Mother Nature going berserk? Is Mother Nature going berserk? Blizzards hitting much of the U.S., earthquakes, sinkholes swallowing whole buildings in Florida, such cataclysms of earth and weather coming on top of each other are raising the question of whether Mother Nature has gone berserk and whether the world is tilting toward profound changes of climate and structure that will intensify. That's U.S. News and World Report. I'm sorry, they used the same word I did. That will intensify over coming years. Intensification. Global evangelism, environmental pollution, number two. Number three, Matthew chapter 24, verse number 7.
Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and earthquakes in various places. Maybe this is a text that we don't want to read here in California. But I sense that there will be, before the coming of the Lord, and there is going on right now, a rising crescendo of natural disasters of all types. Wars, famines, earthquakes are mentioned here. You say, Jerry, that's always been. Sure. You can read in the scriptures how Jesus was asked, you know, about the tower that fell on those 18 people at Siloam. Does that mean that they were worse sinners than anybody else because that tower fell on them? There, you know, there have been accidents and problems from the beginning of time. There's been, you know, a battle going on planet Earth ever since Cain killed his brother Abel. But what I'm seeing from the scriptures is that there is pictured an intensification of these things before the very end. And I would just submit to you that we're witnessing that. That we're witnessing that kind of a crescendo. Now, statistically, it's very hard for me to put any stock in the statistics on wars or even earthquakes. Because I always wonder, and is it really just more, or are we just finally getting around to understanding how to record it and tabulate it and keep track of it? But here's a statistic that you can't argue with. And that is population explosion and the results of that famine. Now, just to set the pace for this, everybody kind of reach down here towards your belt and grab something right here. Okay. Now, some of you maybe can't do that, but most of us can. I see these young ladies are not going to participate. Because obviously you don't. That's fine. That's fine, Linda. That's fine. That's fine. We understand. We understand. You that can't participate in this, you can just sit there and smile smugly at the rest of us. Most Americans are struggling today with obesity. You sit in the shopping mall and you look at people and you know what? We're fat. This country is fat. We all struggle. I mean, slender now, ultra slim, fast. I'm counting fat grams. Thank you, Roger. I'm still doing that. Yes. Counting my fat grams each day, worried about calories, worried about, you know, and finally isn't it wonderful how all of our food's packaging now has finally got a uniform system of telling us what's in it. I love it. It was so confusing before. The government at least has done something right there, right? I mean, there are some good things that are being done by our government and all these agencies, and that's one of them. That's kind of a bright spot. But isn't it a paradox? When all of us are struggling with being too fat, 1 billion people are going to bed starving today on planet Earth? That's incredible, isn't it? You say, well, how does this affect, I mean, how does this relate at all to the signs of Christ coming? Well, when you look at the curve of population density on planet Earth, it kind of grabs you. You might want to write down about four little facts. 1830, the whole world population was only 1 billion. 1830. Took us 100 years to get the second billion. 1930. 2 billion. Took us 30 years to get the third billion. 1960. Took us 15 years to get the fourth billion. 1975. Do you feel it? Do you feel the curve? What's happening to the curve? My friend, this is not just a straight line. This is going up. It is going up steeply. It is going up sharply. And what that means is the limited resources on planet Earth are being fought over by more and more people, and more people are going to starve and go to bed hungry. I mean, it is just, I believe their projection is by the year 2000, 7 billion. 7 billion people on planet Earth. And you know where much of that increase is coming? Yeah, where they don't have anything to start with. Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. Reason number four. Look at Matthew chapter 24, verse 12 again. Because of the increase of what? Now, is there anybody here who would be willing to take me on and say, preacher, this hasn't been intensifying? This world isn't getting more and more wicked. I mean, things are getting better. We are moving into a utopia. Everybody is starting to live more at peace with each other. Yeah. Where have you been? I mean, who was it that was telling me just this last week about the death that was all around? I remember this. I was talking with somebody about their tragedy all around. Difficult to grasp.
But you only have to go to secular news magazines and you read it, an epidemic is abroad in America, as pervasive and as dangerous in its way as the plagues of medieval times. And this particular statement is citing one part of this. If we seem powerless to stop it, it's because so many of us are willing to spend the dollars and break the laws to sustain what has become a $110 billion a year drug habit. We have met the enemy, and he is us. And I don't think anybody has any clue as to how to get it under control. You could put 1,000 officers on the street, you know, for every one now, and it's not going to stop it. I mean, it's not going to stop it, right? I mean, you might be able to just kind of move bubbles of safety around and walk around with your private bodyguard. I don't know if that would even be the solution. Let me give you some good news about pornography. This will make you smile. Did you know that attendance at pornographic theaters is down? Now let me give you the other part of that. Now everybody's just watching them at home. Statistics show that 1 out of 12 Americans, 20 million, watch one or more pornographic videos every week. 1 out of 12. 1 out of 12. That is incredible. It's absolutely destroying us. 1 out of 4 Americans will cheat on their income tax. 1 out of 4. 1 out of 3 will call in sick when they're not to their employer. 1 out of 5 will steal from their employer or pad an expense account. You know, what's happening? I think we're seeing an intensification. That's my point, an intensification of this very sign. You say, well, it's always been true. Sure, you could point to Sodom and Gomorrah, but the reason that Sodom and Gomorrah were so outstanding is that they were different. Sodom and Gomorrah were pointed to as an example of wickedness back in those days because it was not typical of the whole culture and the whole civilization to the extent that today, I mean, if you were going to point to Sodom and Gomorrah, where would you point? Anywhere. Every big city on planet Earth would be typified by that. 2 Timothy chapter number 3. Beginning with verse number 1. But mark this. Mark this. In other words, Jesus is saying, notice this. There will be terrible times in the last days. What kind of times? What kind of time have you been having? What kind of time have you been having? You know, my sense is there is a difference on planet Earth between the 1950s and the 1990s. Do you agree with that? My sense is there's a difference between the 1960s and the 1990s. There's a difference between the 1970s and the 1990s. There's a difference between the 1980s and the 1990s. Because what we are experiencing is an intensification. This is the crescendo at the close. This is the crescendo at the close. The music is saying, hey, folks, it's about over here. There will be terrible times in the last days. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying its power. Boy, I put these 4 intensification signs along with the 3 that we covered last week, and I simply come to the conclusion, Lord, I think you're trying to tell us something. I think it's about over. I think it's about over. It's like the fireworks going off at the end of the program. It's like the movie that comes to its conclusion, and you sense that the credit lines are just about to come up. It is like the symphony that the music, the writer, the composer is saying, okay, you need to get ready now. This is the conclusion. Here is when you can clap. It is finished. It is final. It's coming. And as we come down to the very close, I think that not only is the Lord writing that crescendo score, but Satan, in counterpoint to that, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. I think he is working, and he is turning loose more and more and more of his forces and just expending everything he's got too. And so we're sensing it from both directions. Final text, Luke chapter 12.
Verse number 35. Be dressed, ready for service, and keep your flashlights handy, like people waiting for their master to return from a wedding banquet, so that when he comes and knocks, they can immediately open the door for him. In other words, you're just inside, you're standing there, your hand is ready, just as soon as you hear the knock, turn the door. It will be good for those servants whose master finds them watching when he comes. I tell you the truth. He will dress himself to serve, will have them recline at the table, and he will come and wait on them. It will be good for those servants whose master finds them ready, even if he comes in the second or third watch of the night. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he wouldn't have let his house be broken into. You also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you, church, do not expect him. Byron Widmer was writing in the Review in an editorial, and he was telling about a flight that he made between Ontario, California, and Chicago. He got on the plane at Ontario, and he said that he had an aisle seat, three abreast, probably 737. And as he got on, he was wishing that the middle seat would be vacant, like we all wish when we get on the airplane. Because don't we hate it when we're just... He thought it was going to be until just before the doors closed. And then someone came, and sure enough, they were standing right there at his row. And he says, maybe it was his Santa Claus without the red clothes resemblance, or maybe it was the certain air of a distinguished university professor without that full white beard. Anyway, he looked at this guy, interesting, he noticed him. It wasn't just the normal, there was something that kind of struck him about the fellow, but, you know, he didn't know who he was or anything, and he let him in, he sat down, and they didn't do any more talking or whatever. They took off. Lunch was served on the way from Ontario to Chicago, and it was when the trays were put down for the lunch that Widmer said that he first noticed something about his seatmate. It was slight, it was subtle, but he noticed, just kind of out of the corner of his eyes, he noticed his seatmate's hands, and he saw that they were just shaking just ever so slightly. He engaged him in a little conversation. He said, well, you live in Chicago? No. Well, you live in L.A. You're just going, you know, what's up? Are you going out there on business, or what's happening? As I waited for an answer, I glanced down at his hands, now obviously shaking. He noticed me looking at his hands, and he replied, I can't stop them from shaking. I'm going to Chicago to see my only child, my daughter, who I haven't seen in 18 years. She was only 8 when my wife divorced me and left with our daughter. He rubbed his hands together, but it didn't stop the shaking. I'm nervous, he said, in a voice mixed with feelings of anticipation, love, and even fear, and he went on to tell the story of how his daughter had tried for years to find him, but it had been a difficult task because the mother had not cooperated at all. Finally, the daughter turned to a friend who worked at a credit bureau and made contact, and pictures were exchanged, and letters and phone calls went between the two of them, and plans were made, and he was now off to Chicago to meet, get this, can you feel it? I mean, to meet his grown-up daughter, 8, now 26, her husband, and a grandson, and to try to catch up on 18 years. I wonder, his hands were shaking.
His nervous anticipation showed, what would she be like? Would they like him? Would he know what to say? And then Widmer says something that just really struck me. He says, I'll never know. I'll never know the answers. But I do know that he was one of the happiest persons in the world that day because he was going to be reunited with his daughter. I wonder whether God's hands sometimes tremble in anticipation as he thinks about his coming joyous reunion with his lost sons and daughters. I think that's it. I think that's the intensification. I think that's what we're feeling as we come to this climax of the close. You feel the intensification of the feelings of the Father. You feel the intensification of the antagonism of the devil, his enemy, and everything that can be shaken is being shaken. Don't you sense that as we come to the very close? Everything that's loose, I mean, if it isn't battened down securely, it is going to be shaken. I sense that's what's happening. I can feel the tremble in God's hands all over planet Earth, quite frankly. Dear Lord, as we sense that today and realize the nearness of your coming and think about the joy and the anticipation that you feel for reunion with lost children, I just want to pause in this prayer and kind of open the doors of your kingdom and of your church to somebody who might be here who would like to say, Pastor, remember me in this prayer. I have been away from the Lord, been away from church. I haven't been walking with Him. I have been like that lost child out there, and I am hearing His appeal to my heart, and I want to return to my Father's house and be ready to meet Him gladly, just right there inside the door with my hand on the door latch when He comes. I don't want to be off in some other room doing something else, paying no attention when He rings the bell. I want to be right there, ready, waiting in a state of watchfulness the very moment that He comes to the door. Remember, when it comes to the door of our hearts, Jesus never enters by Himself. Unattended. He only comes in when you open. That's your decision. That's your choice. Is there somebody here who would like to reach out your hand toward God and just say, Lord, that is my choice that I'm making today. I want to register my decision for the Lord right now. God bless you. Somebody else. God bless you. You've been away from the Lord, the Father's house. God bless you. But Lord, I want to come home. I want you to know that I love you. And I want to be right there with my hand on the door, ready to open it as you come. Anybody else? Now, as I was thinking about this, I thought, boy, Jerry, it's so easy to get busy doing other things. You know, it's kind of hard to live there in the waiting room. I want to go off into the kitchen and make a sandwich. I'm going to go to the neighborhood tennis court and play tennis. I want to get busy doing this. I want to get busy doing that. I get preoccupied with this. I get preoccupied with that. I get engrossed in doing this and in doing that. And pretty soon I forget to even be watching the door. And I just want to say to the Lord today, Lord, I love you. And the door is open. I just want to be right there ready with a state of watchfulness. Maybe it could be today, Lord. Forgive me. Forgive me for this scenario that sets up barriers for your coming in the next 30 minutes. I mean, maybe it could be today. Is that something like you would like to say to the Lord? Lord, I want to be in a state of watchfulness and readiness.